Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. It's a great honor for us to be here today at the ILS Artemis in Singapore. And I'm glad to see so many familiar faces again after the 3 year of COVID-imposed break. I would also like to express our big thank you to Steve and his team for putting up this event again after the COVID break, and also for obviously carrying on during the COVID when we had the online conference, which was good as well. Steve has asked us to talk about the development of ILS in Asia over the past few years. I'll do this together with my colleague Tim Yip, who works together with me at HSZ Group, ILS Advisors. And so we do not claim we know everything that happened, so we just try to tell a little bit the story from the journey that we had as ILS Advisors here in Asia and out of Hong Kong.
So ILS Advisors has been, how long, 12 years now. So we've been, I guess, the first ILS manager out of Asia, hopefully not the last. So maybe, Stefan, you can talk about some of your experiences you've had over the past decade and sort of the changes you've seen over that time.
I'm pleased to note, you know, that the interest for ILS in Asia has grown significantly over the past few years. When I moved to Hong Kong from Switzerland in 2011, in order to establish ILS Advisors, hardly anybody in Asia knew about the asset class. At that time, I mainly thought about Asia as a source of investor, of capital, but obviously, as we'll see during our talk, this has also changed to some degree over time. We started off in 2012 with establishing the Eureka Hedge ILS Advice Index, which, based on my knowledge, is probably still the most comprehensive index tracking the performance of the asset class. We did that at that point in order to talk to investors and to give them an idea what kind of returns they could expect from that strategy. At the same time, we started to market ILS in Asia to qualified investors in Asia. And also, we established a multi-manager fund that invested in different managers that are also in the index. It took quite a bit to find the first institution investor in Asia. I think the first institution investor we found in Asia was Korea, a pension fund in Korea, in 2016. I'm aware Japan had invested a bit earlier, but we were just focusing on the new markets at that time.
Okay, so while the investor base has in Asia has been sort of developing over the decade, how about on the other side in terms of Asia risks and different transactions from this part of the world?
Well, actually, I'm pleased to see there has had been some significant steps during the past 10 years in terms of Asian ex-Japan risk that has been brought to the market. Based on our knowledge, the first non-Japanese Asia exposure to be ceded to the catastrophe bond market actually was in 2003. It was after that devastating 7.7 magnitude earthquake in Taiwan, and then in 1999 that had happened, and as a result in 2003 that first cat bond came to the market. More recently, within the last 10 years, several significant milestones have been achieved in the insurance-linked securities market in Asia. Notable among these are China Re's issuance of a small $50 million privately placed China earthquake catastrophe bond, also known as Panda Re. Then, of course, Singapore's establishment of the successful ILS regime and grant scheme, which has led, as has been said before, to a significant number of catastrophe bonds being issued locally, starting with AIG Re's sponsored Orchard Re in 2019. And I think that number's mentioned before, an impressive 24 different catastrophe bonds have been issued out of Singapore, including multiple Japanese cap bonds and also the previously mentioned Australia cap bond and the recently issued New Zealand cap bond. Moreover, there have been three consecutive series of catastrophe bonds issued by MS Amblin Asia Pacific, with over 20 different Pan-Asian different territories being included. Hong Kong is also where we are today. Hong Kong has also made the Home Finance Advisors some efforts to, as a domicile, to issue cap bonds. And specifically, of course, Hong Kong is more focusing on its role as a risk management hub for China and the greater Bay Area, with so far three local seed transactions supported by supporting the local Chinese market. Of course, additionally, Steve has been on the ILS Artemis conference since then. That's probably also important.
Yes, just given all the changes that's been happening, you've seen over the last decade, has the strategy of the ILS advisors changed over that time?
Yes, it has changed, and specifically, I believe, after the experience in 2017 and 18, I think we had to rethink our strategy, and also that, of course, coincided with Singapore and Hong Kong trying to establish themselves as an ILS hub to create alternative capacity for future needs for the region. So we also tried to leverage our location here in Asia as the only ILS manager based here in Asia, and started to explore, you know, the opportunities to actually to create investment opportunities for our own portfolios. We also had found it very, very challenging for us to find well-compensating and diversifying investment opportunities in the ILS market. We felt that the commonly available geographic diversification, such as Japanese wind risk or some European risk, provided lower yields and seemed to be more really for the sake of diversification. We could also, of course, access some of the sidecars from other reinsurers, but they were packaged mostly with U.S. risks and had some, from our view, of course, undesirable liquidity characteristics. Therefore, we started to structure ourselves investment we could not find in the market. So our idea was really to have a more of a geographic diversification. We also, of course, pleased, however, that since focusing on sourcing our own investment opportunities from Asia, which now actually contribute quite significantly to our portfolio, we have been successful in providing accretive investments while avoiding the need to diversify into non-peak, widely syndicated placements that were not sufficiently compensating for our needs. Maybe, Tim, you could explain a bit our strategy when sourcing and originating risk out of Asia over the past 3 years.
Thank you, Stefan. I think when I first got here, which is about 4 years ago, we thought about how we could extract risk from here. What we really didn't want to do was really compete with the traditional paper out here. We could have quite easily, you know, found a fronting partner and then started writing some of the layers out here. But when we looked at it, you know, for our mandates and for a cat bond fund or for our ILS fund, a lot of that stuff just didn't really work with what our investors expected. So what we really looked to do here has always been to try to find the seedings out here that our leaders are able to access risk that we can't, and really work with them and try to find out what their unique solutions are in this area, which is different than maybe some others in the US or Europe, and figure out ways we can package that and extract that so that it fits in within our own ILS fund.
Maybe what are some of the unique characteristics of those opportunities?
Yeah, I think when we look at Asia, one of the things that we really value is it's just really big, right? It's really big, it's really fragmented. And so we really looked at how we can sort of extract that. And so I think one of the greatest things that Asia has is that there's an opportunity, if done correctly, to be able to have that diversification just within the region itself, right? Because the Beijing earthquake is not correlated with maybe an earthquake in Manila, and or India. And so for us, I mean, our portfolio, we cover about 20 different regions within Asia, including covering places like, we have some Guam risks in there, but it didn't get affected by the loss. And some Western Samoa even. And I think the fragmentation within the region actually helps a lot as well, in terms of reducing sort of the correlation between different events. And so for example, if a big typhoon hits, say, the Philippines, and it becomes the worst loss ever there, you know, the chances of that then going up and also being the worst loss ever to hit the Greater Bay Area or to hit Taiwan or something is much lower because they're separated markets. So even for us, we are in Hong Kong and we deal with sort of the greater what we call the Greater China region. Just a typhoon even hitting, say, Taiwan, you know, typically those programs are different than those that are covered on the mainland. So we really try to sort of extract that value and be able to build that independence within the region.
Given that there are so many regions and territories covered in Asia, some people might question, doesn't this create the issues in terms of just the amount of regions and perils that we as an investor need to be concerned with from a risk assessment perspective?
Yeah, so, I mean, one of the the things about Asia is there is quite a lot of the insured loss happens to be, especially where we compete, right? For the attachment levels that for an ILS fund or for where cat bonds typically that we structure attach at, it really has to be huge accumulations, right? And so we're talking about there's only a finite number actually of events that we're really concerned with. So if it's a layer that covers the Philippines, for example, if it doesn't hit Manila, to be honest, it's probably not something that we're too concerned with. So we did see that, for example, a few years ago when there was that super typhoon that hit the Philippines, which was a pretty devastating loss. But for us, you know, we have three layers within our portfolio that covers that, and it was only about 15-20% of attachment point. So for us, you know, it does cover a very wide area, but I think we can sort of isolate the real concerning areas to those, like, say, Beijing earthquake or Taipei or Manila in those areas.
How about Asia cedents? There have been some examples recently issued out of Singapore and Hong Kong. Do you think this will continue?
I think one of the things about Asia is, like, if you look at the top 40 reinsurers around the world, a lot of them actually happen to be in Asia, right? But I think the one thing that they don't have or have not developed yet compared to their peers in, say, London or Bermuda or New York or the US is, they all don't have that sort of alternative capital capabilities in-house, or it's very few, right? And so I think that's a lot of them have interest in it because they hear their peers around the world have been developing this. And so a lot of the people we talk to are interested in it and are keen to look at different or understand how funds like ours or the capacity that we can provide can help with some of the solutions or the issues that they face.
Maybe it's interesting for the audience to talk about what are some of the difficulties that have resulted in the largely underrepresentation of Asia ex-Japan exposure within most ILS funds.
Yeah, I think it's been mentioned probably twice already that the data is still a big concern. The data and the modeling, I think it's the confidence in the modeling. Like I said, Asia is a really wide region, right? And some of the modeling firms only cover one peril or the other peril. And, you know, most of the ILS firms, asset managers like ourselves, we tend to be a bit leaner in terms of resource. And so allocating that much resource to a region and trying to understand all the different models and all the different regions can be quite difficult, especially not knowing what opportunities exist out there at the moment. And I think sourcing risk from here is quite difficult, and a lot of managers have probably not seen the best risks that have come out of here. I mean, if you think of just the way the distribution of this works, right? Like, say you're PICC or something in Beijing, and your client manager happens to sit in Beijing. You know, that broker has all, no offense to broker, they all have the intention to keep it in-house, right? Or to keep it within their local market. And if they can't get it placed there, then maybe out of the Hong Kong office, then maybe they call the Singapore office. But I assume if as a previous broker, you don't really want to share, do you, right? Because you have to share brokerage. No one wants to share brokerage. And so if you can't get it out of Singapore, then maybe you have to call your colleague in London. And then maybe if they can't get it placed out of Lloyd's market, then they have to call their colleague in Switzerland or in Bermuda. And so I think by the time it gets to the desk of somebody, most ILF funds are, whether it's in Switzerland or in Bermuda, if it couldn't get placed in all those different places, probably not the best risk in the world. And so I think it's important for this region to be able to source, to be able to be local and to work with the distribution partners here to be able to source those risks.
For the transactions we have done so far that we structured ourselves together with Amazon, what were some of the views from the investors that you have heard on this?
Yeah, I mean, it's been positive, and it's gained, I think a lot of our investors, our co-investment partners, have been quite happy with how it's developed, and they've gained a lot more comfort, I guess, over the past few years of it performing quite well. The one thing we were quite pleased on was on the first transaction, actually, was supported by about 50% locally from Asia, Asia-based investors, including ourselves. So that was quite a surprise to us, actually. And so I think for a lot of the future for it to develop here, it's quite important that the local investor communities here is also supporting, you know, all investors have sort of a local bias to their own. my turn to ask the question. Sorry. What are some of the? I think that's probably a good. Since we're talking about the investor base, it's probably a good segue to go back to the investor development here. And so, what do you think needs to be done for the asset class to grow in Asia beyond, say, Japan, Korea, Australia, New Zealand?
I think investor education, I think, is the most critical part of it. As we look around, and talk to investors, you know, that are not yet investing in ILS, when there's not yet really a common understanding among Asian investors, you know, about what ILS exactly is, and many have not even heard about. That's still often interesting. It is evident, of course, that the finance professionals, investors in Asia need to put obviously more effort towards education. Because I think in order for an ILS ecosystem to work here in Asia, we don't need just the regulatory and the legal and the tax framework in place, but also I think you need some local capital to support the growth of that local ILS market. And obviously it requires the presence of the distribution channels, sponsors, brokers, for the ILS, for all of these providers that are already here to thrive, you need also support of local capital. Another thing that might help, obviously, I believe, is a significant investment from a large institutional or sovereign wealth fund, I think, in this part of the world probably could help to spark the interest among investors as well. In order also to keep that positive momentum that was mentioned earlier, I think it would be good if we had a few so-called clean years, with very little losses. That would probably help to support the confidence and maybe help some of the Korean investors maybe to come back into the market. we have seen that, you know, how up to 2017, how the asset class was growing, because we had many years of almost 10 years, I believe, of very clean, you know, years where almost that helped to build investors' confidence. So it's important to keep that momentum going in Asia. I think as we have seen in Korea, with Invest only came in very late and had a bad year in 17. So obviously, you know, waiting and to kind of to build to the confidence again to in order to come back.
Stefan, you mentioned Singapore as a very opportunistic area for to develop the asset class. Given your experience in Switzerland when you first started over 20 years ago, maybe you can give some of the parallels given, you know, between Singapore and say the development in Switzerland, which I think has probably 25% now of the AUM for the whole market.
Yeah, interestingly enough, you know, in Switzerland and I think almost in Europe, I think that the first ILS investors actually were high net worth individuals that invested through private banks. These huge investors came about, I think, 5 years later. And but of course, the institutional investor interest was prerequisite in order to grow to the asset class to the size where we are today. And here, you know, what I see, I mean, Singapore and also Hong Kong are two of the top three wealth management centers in the world. And I think all this is here, right? We just need to find a way to connect, you know, the investors with the asset class here. And again, also, if you look today, if you look at the attendance list, you know, you see there are very few allocators yet, right? So hopefully in the future we'll see a lot more people that can allocate capital. Another maybe more technical issue I see sometimes, you know, there's still a lack of common understanding, I think, where does ILS belong in the asset allocation of an investor, right? Is it a hedge fund? Is it a private debt? You know, what is it exactly? And in order for obviously private banks to allocate, there needs to be a clear understanding what it is. And I think there's still many different views even among, I think, the ILS community.
Maybe you can talk about some of the unique concerns or the common concerns that you face when talking to investors out here.
Of course, climate change is a topic that, you know, is in everybody's mind these days, of course, and that comes up immediately with the asset class, particularly, I believe, in Asia, you know, because we are in an area we do have a lot of natural, disaster catastrophes. And so, I mean, it's very tangible. You know, people are very well aware of that. You know, for example, just looking at our Hong Kong experience, you know, there's almost 17 and a half days on average every year where we have cyclone warnings in Hong Kong. And then there's another usually 2.5 days per year where people get the extra holiday because due to a typhoon, people cannot go to the office. And even the stock market is closed on these days. Another question, of course, is the liquidity for many investors, right? So that's a question that comes up. And sometimes, of course, the currency risk, you know, question of how do you hedge? Looking at Japanese yen, for example, right, as you're aware, I mean, obviously that's a big issue there, you know, to hedge the currency. Obviously, the return in US dollars are totally different from what you see in Japanese yen.
Concerning of time, maybe you can just finish off with maybe just it's been 10 years so far in Asia for yourself within the asset class. Maybe you can give a forecast for the next 10 years.
I think, as we said, you know, I think all the ingredients in Asia are here to contribute to a meaningful growth of the asset class. There's a supportive regulator. You know, we have two of the large financial centers in the world, two of the top three wealth management centers in the world. We have reinsurance expertise here. We have large reinsurance demand in the region, and as the region obviously faces a lot of more frequent natural disasters than anywhere else in the world. So that is given. I think also the expertise in terms of the service providers exists in the region, and the infrastructure, and all this is, I think, is in place. So I'm quite confident that Asian interest in ILS will grow, will continue to grow in the coming years. driven obviously by increasing demand for insurance products from the growing wealth in Asia, and obviously the need for efficient risk management. As we move forward, I think it's important that we continue to collaborate and share our knowledge and expertise with also with people outside of the industry in order to ensure that we can really realize the potential of the asset class here in Asia. We, of course, from ILS Advisor, will contribute our share to make sure you know that ILS will be a lasting success here in this part of the world.